welcome everybody to the Racing Home Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Agutter, with the co-host, Fez Bobber, now that I said his last name right, I think.
After a decade, yes.
All right, sweet. And who do we have, Fez?
We have a new host as a guest today, Eddie Siegel.
Yo, what up?
So a lot of y'all probably already know Eddie. You probably know Eddie a lot better than y'all know me. But he drives a Civic Type R in street class and grid life. So him and I were actually sharing the track at Laguna, 2 months ago? Wasn't that right, Eddie?
Yeah, it was really fun watching you go off in front of me.
Yeah, well, Fez came up to me and said, like, hey, did you go off or something along those lines? Eddie saw you go off and almost crash into the wall. And my head's like, I was never close to the wall. And then I thought back, like, yeah, that could have ended badly. but I saved that. What was that? Turn 1, 2, 3, 4. Turn 4. It was making the right turn for turn 4. And I went 2 off on the left side. And I came back on track, but like, came on back onto the track, I guess, a little bit sideways. So it shot me pretty far to the right side of the track. But I was able to straighten out and keep going straight. Yeah, is that Eddie? Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, I just remember lifting and being like, "Oh, this can go real bad."
Oh, my bad. I didn't mean to. That was on our. That was like our first lap, right? Like the first.
Yeah, and you were on new tires, so that was where I was like, "Oh, he's probably has not scrubbed them." And you know, I this is one of the common issues that I have with grid life events. Is you don't get enough seat time, so that just puts on the pressure to use all of the time you have, hence the just going out there and forgetting that you have brand new tires on your car and almost crashing.
or tires. Yeah, don't worry about it.
So, wait, have you...
can you hear me?
Do you think the shaved tires are pretty good?
Yeah, can you hear
us?
Yeah,
I can hear you. Yeah, we can
hear you. Yeah, I can hear you guys. Okay, cool. Oh, okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I mean, the shaved tires help a lot. The shaved and heat cycle tires, like, because you don't have to scrub them in. They're already kind of pretty scrubbed in for you to ready to go.
It's like the junk on the tires, right? That's what causes all the, like, the compound in the rubber to, like, exfoliate. I don't know what to say. I'm not a tire guy.
Me neither.
We need Matt on here for that.
Yeah, we'll get him on here at some point. Yeah. What did you guys do this weekend? What did you do, Eddie? Normally ask Fez.
I did something I rarely do, which is go to a car show. Like a Cars and Coffee, if you want to even call it that.
Nice. Were there burnouts?
There were actually.
No, damn it.
It was but they were provoked. Like they people wanted them to happen, and it wasn't like, you know, wasn't like a takeover or anything. We were donating toys for children.
That was cool.
Yeah, it was Toys for Tots. So it was really nice. And in Massachusetts, like going to a car event in December is almost unheard of. So like it should be snowing right now, but it's 50 degrees and warm. So it's just weird. So I was like, oh, it's beautiful out. Let's go. Had a good time. Got to see a Lamborghini Diablo, like a early version of it, like a 91.
Ooh, sweet.
And I can't fit in it very well, so
you actually got to sit in it too. Not only did you get to see it, but you got to sit in it.
So the guy, so my friend is also the mechanic that works on my Honda when I'm not good enough to work on the car, like things that I don't trust myself doing, he'll do it. He had it. He's been working on it for a while and was like driving it around to like test, I'm assuming. So I love the Lamborghini Diablo, so I was like starstruck. And it's as Italian as it can be. Like the seat isn't straight, you know, it's pointed inward. The pedal box, you have to take your shoes off. Like my foot would hit the clutch pedal and the brake. So
speaking of, that makes me funny you bring that up, because on the drive back, so all today I was driving the Focus to work into the dinner, and I was wearing my cowboy boots because I have to wear composite or steel toe boots on the construction site, And oh man, not only does the Focus RS have a very non-communicative clutch, but you add on top of that wearing cowboy boots, and I was missing every heel toe shift. I could not do it. But yeah. It sounds pretty, this is awesome to get to enjoy the car show.
I remember when I used to live in Nebraska, I would still daily drive my FRS, and I had to wear like snow steel toes, which are even bigger than normal steel toes.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I couldn't basically drive it. And then getting in and out of the car was difficult. I actually scratched my steering wheel, like the leather ripped up because I hit my shoe on it.
Huh?
Yeah.
What? Wait.
How did your shoe hit the steering wheel?
Yeah.
It's a low car. Are you going through the window? Well, no. The shoe's so big. And like, I'm also a bigger person, so it's hard to get in and out of.
I need a diagram. I don't see
it. It's so low to the ground. What, did you jump out of it?
I fell out, yeah, in a way.
Yeah, okay, all right. This is the old or the new one?
This is the old one.
Yeah. No. Oh, okay. You're right. The old one. Aren't they the same ergonomic-wise?
Well, the old one had the stock steering, which was like a 350 or 360 mil or something like that. It was a bigger steering.
I actually have no idea.
Did you not
idea.
See me how much I struggled getting into Ravi's car?
Yeah, but he had a fixed seat. And it was his is a fixed seat down on the bottom with a cage. Imagine trying to go through the window with that. So yeah, what Fez, what do you do this weekend?
First off, I want to say that Eddie, every single time I see your stories, you're always around cool cars. And Eddie is the most humble guy I know, because he's like always around like cool stuff. The rarest cars I've seen too. Like, weren't you around like a 765 LT at one point?
yeah. The cars around here are pretty weird. It's like there's nothing really JDM around here. Like, a lot of the people who like JDM stuff kind of keep it to themselves. Mm-hmm. And the car shows around here, it's all European stuff. Most of it BMWs, Audis, Mercedes, and then
that's
exotics.
Basically Dallas too.
Mm-hmm.
It's either that or muscle cars.
Dallas has a pretty good JDM scene. Roz is putting it together, his Mazda Miata group together.
Yeah, but do you really want to be associated with Mazda Miata guys?
Fair.
Sorry, Raza.
It also helps that my friend is a big YouTuber and all he does is drive really cool cars. So I get to mooch off of him and see these cars in person.
Hold on, Eddie.
They're cool.
Is this the same guy that has the inline six-cylinder diesel semi pickup truck? Not pickup truck, but RV. Is that the same guy?
No. That's David of Ren Scott in Garage 42. No, Tedward. Tom.
Oh, Tedward. Okay.
Friend of mine. Yeah. So, you know, when I hang out with him, he's always usually has something laying around that he's working on or filming. So it's
that's awesome.
And then some of my friends also just drive cool stuff. So I'm actually like the most probably I have like the most normal cars of all my friends, and that's crazy to say that.
I mean, it is a street car.
Fez, I appreciate the compliment.
Of course, dude.
I'm very lucky.
I saw the LFA that Tedward is driving with the roadie form wheels, I think. It looked so cool. Definitely a dream car.
Oh, the HREs. Oh, my God.
Other HREs. LFA. Yeah.
That is nuts.
I want to hear one in person. I've never actually heard one in person.
Let me see if I can borrow one.
Wait, really?
No, that's not happening.
Well, I was gonna say, not only can you get 5 weeks of vacation and all those fancy perks at Toyota, now you also get to drive LFAs.
Mm-mm, that's not happening.
It's one of the things you can buy. You can buy an hour with the LFA. It's, you know,
I wish paychecks.
Ooh, you know how cool that'd be? Like, you could have a week of vacation, or you could have an hour with an LFA, uncorked, at ECR or some kind of a track.
I think I would still take the week of vacation.
I think I would too. 1 week. Yeah, I would too. A week. Because you can go Turo one for longer.
Yeah. Realistically. Yeah. For my weekend, I hung out with some friends as well. The you don't know Zach Eddie, but he's one of our college friends as well, and hung out with him and his wife. They invited me out to your cousin's place for board games, and it was just like a very Catholic household, and I'm very Muslim and brown, so it was kind of awkward at first. But you know, there's like just there's three blonde girls that got drunk, wine drunk, and started talking about random stuff from abortion to circumcision. So I basically started another podcast with them of talking about abortion and how uncircumcised penises have.
What?
Bleep that.
14 minutes and 25 seconds into. Okay, I meant. Took a mental recording.
Yeah, so it was an interesting night. And then...
Oh, hold on, Fez. Your microphone got a little weird. Do you hear it too, Eddie?
Yeah, I heard that. Oh.
Oh, we can hear you now.
Okay. But yeah, that was my night, Friday
night.
No,
hold on. Now it's good.
Is it bad or good or what's going on?
It's like every time you start to talk about your topic, it starts to go south.
It sounds like you like... It's like you're inhaling helium and then
it does
talking.
How do you know I'm not?
Well, no judgment then. Here.
You do it after the podcast.
I just get high off of helium, dude. That's my thing. Drugs are no, heliums are yes. But yeah, that was kind of my weekend. Just hung out with some friends, recovered. I've been looking at E92 M3s again.
No.
Okay, thank you, Eddie. Thank you for agreeing.
Does Tom still have his?
No, because he's smart.
Oh. Well, does he miss it?
No.
Oh.
He has an E39 M5. He doesn't miss it.
Okay, that's worse. No, reliability-wise?
No.
Is it not? Okay.
E90s are much worse.
But they ref.
Wait, hold on.
I warned you when you had the red one. Before you bought that, I said, dude, you're going down a rabbit hole that I don't think you want to find. And you're like, oh, it'll be fine. I know what I'm doing. And then within like 6 or 7 months, it was like the reality sets in. And it's like, wow, I've spent $3,000 in maintenance. And the car has literally been sitting because I can't drive it. And when I do drive it, I'm scared to drive it because it always breaks.
I mean,
have you had a BMW?
Have I? I've had a few.
Oh, okay. Have they all been the similar experience of what you just described?
Yep.
Fez, you should listen to Eddie.
Listen, bad example. Okay. The previous owner's mechanic took a hammer to the engine and had to get like half the engine rebuilt. Right. And I feel like the second time now I know what's going on. What needs to be fixed. I can check those items prior to getting it. Right? Right?
How are you going to check rod bearings?
Yeah. How do you?
I'm not going to buy a car without that having the rod bearings done. Rod bearings and throttle actuators are a must.
Yeah, but they can say they did it. How do you know?
Receipts.
They can pull it. They can make a fake invoice.
Okay, if someone's going that far out, then I probably deserve it at that point.
All I will say is that you need to listen to Eddie's and Devin's latest podcast about the red flags and used car sales and just avoid all of that. Everything they say, avoid all the red flags.
Here's my thing. Here's my take with E90 BMWs, specifically M3s. They are a really good second or third car. Their engines are incredible. The manuals are adequate for what it is. The DCT is pretty good. It still shifts pretty fast considering its age. And the interior, if you get the right combination, it doesn't date itself. Like now I would get one without navigation if I could, especially I
100% garbage. yes
you know, it's funny, like when I was looking at those cars years ago, it was like it has to have the LCI updated iDrive and this and that. Now it's like, no, I don't want any of that. I want speed cloth if possible. No options. like, here's the thing with those cars, like, people want the competition pack and all this stuff, but like, you can go out and get aftermarket stuff for much less and is much better quality. I mean, the competition package was designed, what, 15 years ago, maybe? Mm-hmm. You know, like, that technology has come and, you know, gone. But that being said, they just, they're not a good, reliable daily driver. I feel like they're now, you know, you're seeing cars popping up with two, three, four owners. And then the people who have the really clean ones want absurd money for them. They're like, I know what I got, people. Mm-hmm. And they're rightfully so, because they're becoming cars that are attainable to everybody. So now you're just seeing the oh, it's starting to smoke. I'm going to dump it really quickly on Facebook Marketplace. And, you know, that's what I'm starting to see. These cars are not, they're just really expensive to run, and the people who can afford them don't realize that, and then they dump them, and that's why you see all the owners.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the cars are not the most reliable. I mean, Jason's E92 M3 literally blew up right in front of me, and chunks of his engine hit my car. So I understand the complications that you can possibly have with owning an E92. And yeah, I think for me, like, if I were to do it again, I'm gonna look for like a clean example, like lower mileage. Like, I was just thinking about it, because like, I don't think there's another car out there for me that can do the same under 50K.
What do you want? Like, what do you, first thing, 50K, there's a lot of cars out there, but yeah. I won't get into it. What is so special about an E90 that, or an M3, E90 M3 that you can't find with anything else?
So the engine alone is, like, to me, is worth it. And then the fact that you can daily drive it, and then also take it to the track, drive it to the track and drive it back. You know, that I kind of like that aspect of things now.
So what about the engine do you like more than the MK5 Supra?
Just the high revving engine, the way the power delivery is, the way it screams. It's like an emotional car.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that on so many fronts. That engine is spectacular. It's a race engine. You know, that was BMW's peak right there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That, the V10 and the straight six, those engines. Yeah. My thing is with that V8 is the handling actually isn't as good as you'd think, because it's so heavy. It's so nose heavy. It you have to do a lot to make them turn really well. That being said, why don't you look at like a Shelby GT350?
I've heard they aren't reliable either.
Nope, they're not.
Didn't Jason have two of them before the BMW or something like that?
I don't know.
I think he had I thought he had a 350 before either the BMW or the McLaren. Anyways, every car is going to have its weak spots. The Focus is known for its head gasket problems. Actually, I take the back. Is a Type R known for any kind of weak points?
Yeah, they get hot and then they blow up.
Oh, okay. So Focus RS problems.
The transmissions aren't very well made.
Hmm. What gear typically goes out?
I feel like that's just boosted car problems now.
Fourth. That's true. I think it's just like the transverse engine situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you can only put so much gearing like in those transaxles. I mean, there's a limited amount of space, and the heat is immense, I'm sure. So,
yep.
They blow up.
Bummer. Is yours still completely stock, or has it been rebuilt or opened up at all?
I blew mine up at New Jersey this year.
Really? Who rebuilt it? Did you?
I did not rebuild it. I bought another used one and slapped it in there for Mid-Ohio.
Nice. I really hope that does not happen to me this year. We'll see. Yeah,
very expensive fuck up.
Oh, no. Especially with that kind of turnaround. Well, awesome. Yeah, as far as like topics I kind of want to get into, Fez and I have never actually spoken about like our upbringing from like childhood into like how we're all kind of racing, or how we even got to the point of like talking to one another here on the podcast. Because like for me, myself, I don't know, do you want to get into this now? Do you have any other weekend topics?
I want to start off by letting Eddie know this might turn into like a therapy session. Are you okay with that? Or do you want to talk about something else?
Oh, please. No, I'm fine with that.
Okay, cool.
It's 9:30 on a Monday night. I got nothing else going on.
You don't work tomorrow?
No, I do, but I work in IT, so it's pretty
nice.
It's pretty the same thing every single day. Fixing broken stuff.
Getting to the next Jira ticket and resolving it. Do you use Jira?
Zendesk.
J-I-R-A? Oh, I've not heard of that one.
We do have Jira, but we don't use it.
That's like all we use over at my place. Okay, so Fez, I'm curious to hear why it's a therapy session on your part.
I feel like most minorities have a different upbringing than other people, right? Like, hobbies aren't really considered to be, or they're not really frowned upon, but like they're not supported because it's like, oh, can you make money off of it? No. All right, then why are you doing it? Right. So that's why I feel like if I got into it, it might just turn into like, all right, like the therapy session in a way for some people. I don't know.
That's fair. So like growing up, did you have any like car toys growing up? Did they buy you any racing games? Like how did you even get into cars in the first place?
I had a lot of Hot Wheels, and then I had my first game actually was Need for Speed Most Wanted.
Ooh, same. Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
No, not Most Wanted. My first Need for Speed game was Underground 2 on like the OG Xbox.
So good.
Yeah, I can still hear like the intro music playing in the back of my mind.
Underground 2 Dog. Was
yes.
What I used to play my cousin's place, and then I got Most Wanted because when I got my PS4 or PS2. Yeah.
Would it have been the PS2? Yeah. I've only been an Xbox.
Fez, how old are you?
I'm 27.
Okay, so Most Wanted would make sense. Or Underground 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me. Wait, Eddie, how old are you?
I'm 30.
Shit, I'm the adult here. Okay. I'm 31.
I'm going to be 31 in February, so I'm not far behind you.
93 kid. Nice.
Yep. I would say video games definitely had a big part for sure.
Did either one of you have like those rugs or one of those rugs that had it was like a town and you could like get and like drive the car around a little town on this rug?
I think what's his name? DJ. Sorry, DJ. I forgot your name for a second. But DJ has like that rug on his behind his sim rig as like a sound insulator thing. So yeah.
Ooh, that's pretty smart. That's pretty clever. Oh man, I have no idea where mine ever went, but as far as for me, like I remember my parents like for Christmas, and granted it's the holidays, so appropriate time to be talking about this. But my parents would always buy me Hot Wheels, or I had that rug in my room. What was the other thing that the other automotive train, Thomas the Tank Engine. I had a Thomas the Tank Engine train set growing up, so that was always pretty cool. But for me, once I got into high school and started driving, they definitely did not approve of me staying out late. Always questioning, why were you out so late around the highway? Type situation. So, they always, at least they were always relatively supportive in like the idea of cars, but they definitely shot down any idea of like spending money on cars. That was not purely on maintenance.
So how'd you get into, I guess, the motorsport aspect of things?
You want to ask me or Eddie first?
Actually, I'm going to ask a general question first. Like, Eddie, how did you get into cars?
How did I mean, I can't remember a time that I didn't like cars. That's how long I've liked cars.
Did your parents like cars?
My mom somewhat likes cars, but she's not like an enthusiast by any means. She just appreciates nice cars. My dad somewhat likes cars as well, but again, wasn't like modifying anything or, you know, going to the track. I grew up, I loved Hot Wheels. I love trains. I love boats. Anything with an engine, I fell in love with. And I think it just, turned into an obsession pretty much. And that obsession has never gone away. So
yeah.
I would not say that it was my parents that got me into liking cars. I'm going to assume it was some television show or books, you know, or just videos or something. But I mean, I can't remember when I didn't like cars, but I mean, I had Hot Wheels, all the toys.
Yeah.
And then when video games, you know, became a thing for me, I think I was like in second or third grade. I mean, it was all racing games, and
yeah,
that's what I love.
Yeah. From, like speaking, going back to like the video game aspect, I had Need for Speed 2, Most Wanted, Skip Carbon, and then like after like completing the campaign on Most Wanted is when I jumped into Forza Motorsport, I think 4, maybe 3. In any case, from then on, it was always Forza Motorsport, even up until just this past weekend when I finally got an Xbox Series X, just so I can go and actually play the latest Forza game. So I've heard mixed things about it. Like I bought it up in Dallas. I've only been able to play it on the controller. I have not brought it down to Austin to play on my sim rig yet. But I mean, so far it feels like Forza, but I've only done like the intro races so far.
Yeah, I'm a huge Xbox person, by the way.
Sweet. How do I not have your gamer tag yet?
I know. We'll have to connect after this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have a Sony as well, so don't worry, Fez. I'm a total nerd. I'm a huge video game nerd. I have mixed feelings about the new Forza. It's
interesting. Okay, do you play on controller or a sim rig?
I play on controller because I don't like the physics of Forza. Now that I've been playing iRacing for forever now, it's very hard for me to like be like, oh, this is really sim racing.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
It's Simcade. I get that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I also have Gran Turismo on the PlayStation 5, and that handling physics model is much better in my humble opinion.
Okay, absolutely, try that out.
So yeah, playing them back to back, I just prefer Gran Turismo this round, anyways, this generation so far. I don't like the way you have to level up your cars, how every car is individual now. So like if I wanted to make two different Type R's, I would have to individually level them up. And it can take like 3 hours to be able to unlock a lot of the components of the car. So I'm just like, this has turned into a grind fest because they just want to see the numbers of people being captivated in the game. And to me, that's just really... I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. You know, it feels like they're doing it on
purpose
to just get it. It feels forced. Totally does. So
that sucks. So give me
another ruin it month for you.
Give me another month or two and I'll probably have the same opinion. We'll see.
I will say though, I just want to add one thing. The multiplayer online is surprisingly fun. I play with a few friends. We'll jump on and do like a few races.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Is that in Rivals? Like Rivals
mode? No. Wheel to wheel. Like wheel to wheel. Oh,
okay.
Sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really fun. So you definitely want to try that. That to me is like the best part of this game so far.
Do I need to get an Xbox now just to play with you guys?
Dude, Fez. Okay. The reason why I bought it, I'm sorry. I'm hyped about this because I've been eyeing Xbox Series X prices at Costco. For the past like literally a year and a half, and I've been telling Carol like once the price drops below like $460, like I'm jumping on that. And this past weekend at Costco, when we went through, it was like $110 off. It was $550, so I was like, done, I'm buying it.
He had this whole thing planned with his wife for a year, and he was like, as soon as this happens, I'm doing it. His wife was like, all right.
I can invite Carol right now, and she will say yes, and that's what happened to the T. If you're gonna get a Series X, you have to buy it before Christmas. That's when the deal ends. $110 off.
Best Buy, I think, is also doing that same deal, give or take. And even if they don't, you can go in there and show them that, and they'll be like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, that's true. Does it come with an extra controller? Because the Costco one
comes with an extra controller. Oh, yeah. So I don't know that. Two
controllers and Series X.
That's a good deal. I mean,
I think Best Buy might be. I think Best Buy right now and Target. I think they're all at $399.
Yeah, $400.
Yep. Yeah. So then this one comes with an extra controller. In any case, yeah. So Fez, buy an Xbox, get Game Pass, get Forza, and hop online to do wheel to wheel with Eddie and I.
Sounds like a plan. I did some wheel to wheel this past weekend on Assetto. My friend set up a server with on a Toge run, and I don't like it, but because I just kept going off into the trees, dude. going back to the topic. So, question for you guys, another one. So, when you guys initially got into HPDE or tracking or time attack, what was y'all's parents' initial reaction to it?
Why are you wasting so much money on tires and brakes and gas? That was the first reaction.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't think my parents realized the costs associated with motorsports.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to step back a few moments here. I didn't immediately go into HPD. I started in autocross. That's how my beginnings of motorsports began. I was tired of getting speeding tickets and getting in a lot of trouble. So would they have this abandoned Air Force Base, not too far from us, and they do all the autocrosses there. So I signed up for one and I was hooked immediately. Little did I know that it was basically 3 minutes in a car for 6 hours of standing around. But the fact that I could legally spin my car out and, you know, drift it around corners, I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And that's where the bug started. But I think HPD, by that point, I'd been autocrossing for some time. So I don't think they really looked at it any different. They were kind of like, oh, that's so nice. So.
What was your first car to autocross in?
My BMW.
BMW
135.
Oh, sweet. Okay, well, that's pretty nice.
I had a 135i, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, for like on my end, once I started getting into HPD, like I think the very first, it wasn't even HPD, it was a lead and follow at Eagles Canyon Raceway. And it was just kind of the instructors leading a group of like 5 to 10 cars, and that's all we did. Like, we barely pushed a car. I don't even think I heard the tires squeal. Nonetheless, like, just being out there in that open track got me hooked. And then when I told my parents about it, they shut me down. They're like, if you're gonna continue doing this, you're gonna do this long after you're in college and long after you graduated college and get a job, and you're spending your own money to do this hobby if you really want to pursue it. So going through college, I had stepping it back, I had a little bit of autocrossing similar to Eddie, and that was in my 2004 WRX wagon. Did that a couple of times, sold that so I could like keep on funding myself going through college. Got the Focus RS in my senior year and got back into autocrossing a little bit in the west area of Texas. But man, autocrossing in Texas in the summertime sucks, man.
Oh, it's standing brutal.
Standing out in the sun for 3 hours, watching cars go by and picking up cones back and forth. It is, it's tough. Nonetheless, though, like, it's still a lot of fun. And I agree, like, it is a great gateway to getting car control, learning car control, learning different driving dynamics of slamming on the brakes, slamming on the gas pedal, and actually feeling that rear end step out whenever you, either get it, whether you intended that to do so, in that case, getting it right or getting it wrong. But then HPDE didn't really start happening for me until Utah, whenever I went out for the Ford Adrenaline Academy. I kind of touched on this on the last podcast, and then after that, I've just been funding myself. And to this day, my mother still texts me, do you really have to go? Please be safe and whatnot. She has never seen me out on track. But I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to change that this year at America.
Yeah, you gotta do it once. You gotta have your parents out there once. It was really special. Yeah, for me.
What was the first? What track did you go to with your parents?
So okay, well, actually, I just wanted to touch on something. So I went to the Octane Academy when I had a Focus ST.
No way! I love you even more now.
Oh yeah, my girlfriend has a Focus ST currently.
What's the Octane Academy?
It's a 18. So last year.
Nice. So the Eddie, what's the Octane Academy for Fed?
The Octane Academy is very similar to what Nick went to with this Focus RS. Basically, you drive your Ford product that you spent money on their racetrack at Miller Motorsports Park. I don't think it's even called that anymore, but at the time,
no, it's called Utah Motorsport Campus now.
And they do an autocross, which is really fun. That was like my favorite thing. And they time you, and then they did a skid course in a car with like dollies in the back that lift, so like you lose grip and you know you have to control the slide. And then they let you go out on the racetrack in a Focus ST, and I had an absolute blast. And I definitely wish they still did that. I wish Ford still liked performance cars.
I wish so too. Granted, they are still doing that,
but it's with the flavor. Dark Horse. And
yes, shit. But they also do it with the Bronco and the Raptors.
The so, like, GTD. If you buy... What about that?
Do they? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I feel like GTD. if you're spending that much on that car, you should be able to afford a track day. You could just buy the track.
That's I think they're still doing like the training situations. Like,
yeah, they're still doing the
specific, but they're not. They don't have a hatchback for us noobs or entry level blue collars to go out and buy something affordable and go out to do a track day.
Oh, it was wild that they basically let anybody who bought this car out there. I mean, it was so cool.
Yeah.
And the instructors were really nice, and I actually still am friends with them on Facebook. So
nice.
Yeah. So
wait, Eddie. Since we both done Utah Motorsport Campus, do you recall which one we did? Did we do the east side or the west side?
Let me pull up the old Google.
Oh, never mind. We did, at least I did east side. In the last podcast, Fez and I talked about like the length of different tracks, and turned out Utah Motorsport Campus was actually in the top five of longest tracks in America if you did the full course. So that was a fun little fact.
Did you did you do the go-karting there?
No, I did not do
go-karting. Oh my god, the go-kart track there is one of the best tracks I've ever been to. It's so fast. You get up to like 60 miles an hour. It is wild.
Are they shifter carts?
I don't think so.
They're not shifter carts.
They're just really fast CVTs. Yeah. and that was part of it. That was like the last thing they let us do.
That is so cool. What's cool about the Focus one is that we got to use the drift stick. So they had a session.
Yeah, they had.
You had it too?
Yeah, they had that in the car. I mean, I didn't have all-wheel drive, so I could only just spin it around, but they had it in the car.
Yeah, so for me, they had a water truck over there, and it was in an open area. And so they had two cones, and you just got to go around, I think it was like a good solid five or six times, just going around the cone, ripping the e-brake, feeling like Ken Block as you spun the car around in a perfect semicircle. And man, if it wasn't $1,000 to buy that electronic e-brake, I would buy it for the price of an Xbox One. Sorry, Series X.
Yeah, they go for big money, especially mm-hmm. now that he's passed away. I mean, people are going out of their way to buy all the Ken Block stuff.
Yep, I'm a legend.
I did the outer course, I think.
Lucky. So you did do the one of the longer versions.
Yes, nice. We had the full straight and everything. It was fun.
Yeah, I did the east side. So do your parents still go to tracks with you, Eddie?
Yeah. So back to that. So yeah, it was really special. So my dad has been to the track a bunch of times with me. He'll come and watch and you know, just hang out and be there. But my mom was very hesitant. She didn't want to watch it. You know, she didn't want to see it. She wanted nothing to do with it until Grid Life went to Lime Rock in 2022. And I'm like, please, can you go to this event? It would mean the world to me. And my mom went, and I ended up placing third. So it was really special.
That is awesome to like be on the podium at the same time that your mom and your folks are over there at the racetrack.
Yeah.
That is really so nice. Cool.
So now she goes to the Grid Life at Lime Rock event.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Is that like the closest Grid Life event to you?
Yes, that is about 2 hours from me.
Oh my God, nice. You're so lucky.
2 hours. How far is NJMP?
About five.
Yeah, that's not too bad either.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure if you've listened to my podcast, have heard my rant on this year's schedule. But what events are you trying to go to? They fucked the East Coast over, in my opinion.
Yeah. Hey, man, at least you still have a track that's 2 hours away.
Exactly.
Real quick. Dude, okay, so the closest track to Fezzanai is Audubon Country Club in Chicago. Is it the closest track to us?
I'm really sorry because I don't like that track either. So
I'm not going to it.
I'm very sorry. but I will say the only reason I met Fez was because I was at Audubon. So there's one positive.
Silver lining.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, absolutely.
It's funny because him, Eddie, Grant, and Jim, all three of these guys, I met them at Audubon, and now they're like one of my closest friends.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's what I love about Grid Life events is that not only is it like going out there and having fun with your car, but like it's the vibes, it's the people, it's the friendships that you go and make. Mm-hmm. Like I have shockingly made so many friends, and I've become better friends with you, Fez, through Grid Life.
Yeah.
Even though you ditched me from NOLA.
Sorry.
NOLA was so much fun. I really hope they go there again someday in the future. But Fez, have your parents ever been to the track?
So no. Actually, my parents haven't been to a single sporting event of mine. They just didn't think. Yeah, same thing, right? Like, it's not really important. Because again, you're not like making money or like it wasn't a thing back in like coming from Pakistan too. Like we moved here from there. Like over there, the culture isn't there of you doing extracurricular activities. The culture of there is you just study and go to school and then work and start a business or whatever right, for the rest of your life. So when we moved here, the culture is different. Well, people's parents show up to like their events or support them and like extracurricular activities, and that just kind of doesn't happen. So no, they never did, but and I'm trying to get them to go to at least one event. It wasn't until recently where they actually started watching me on the live stream.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so they do watch me on the live stream. I see my nephews watching me on the live stream. My sister would send me like their video of them like cheering me on and whatnot. it's kind of cute. And then my sister and two of my nephews actually came to the Audubon event. When I met Eddie, actually, that was the first time they were actually at an event just to see how it was. And then I got to take my nephew on a ride at Audubon this year.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome. I remember you doing that. That is so cool.
Yeah.
So while my own parents have not been to any event with me, Carol's parents came out with me, or Carol's mom and her aunt. They came out with us to HMP this past year. And so on Sunday, after I was done with the competition, I was able to ask Adam and get into one of the HPDE sessions and actually take her on out on track.
Nice.
And that was such a good time for her. And she's a bit of a, I guess, a bit of an adrenaline junkie. She actually used to play pretty high in whatever China's basketball league is.
Oh wow.
Not the NBA, not like women's NBA, but something that's close cool. to that. But she was a really good basketball player, and she's really good with going outside and doing like activities. Leave it at that. In any case, like she was having so much fun out there in the track with me, and I cannot wait to take her back out there. So like one of these days, I just want to show my mom, and, like hopefully get her in the passenger seat to like not push the car too much, but like kind of show her that it's like a safe environment. As long as you know what you're doing and you're around others that also know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Likewise, my mom is starting to watch the live stream just recently this year.
Yeah. So. They were not very supportive, especially after my accident that happened in Mid-Ohio. Like, the immediate answer was like, okay, just stop. You're done. Like, why are you doing this? And then I told them, like, I'm sorry, I'm going to go back on track the same weekend. And they're like, what's wrong with you? and Yeah, and then like this year specifically, like I started getting some podiums here and there, and started understanding of being more understanding of like, okay, this is like not just a hobby in a way.
Yeah,
you know, like when I got first at Laguna, that was the first time I saw both my parents like be ecstatic and like share with their friends of like, oh look, he got first place, and I was like, oh dang,
oh that is so cool.
So it, I think it changes once the parents do realize like, okay, like. He's winning. He's not just, you know, anybody doing anything. It's like we're traveling all across the country to.
Yeah, like you're trying to make a name for yourself.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is so cool. So they're a lot more open to it now.
They still don't understand it. They just are supportive of it in a way.
That is funny. Do they look well?
Dude, the funniest thing was at Midwest Festival, I lost third place by like 0.003 seconds, right? And yeah. My dad called me afterwards for the first time ever. And then he's like, so how did it go for you? And I was like, yeah, I got fourth. And he's like, why not first? And I was like, that's okay. And then I was like, yeah, like my car was like sliding or something like that. And he was like, yeah, I could see, I could definitely drive better than you. And I was like, oh shit, okay. It was just, you know, immigrant parent. That type of conversation I had, and one of our buddies, Andy Sayo, I think you've met him, Eddie, as well.
C5 in Street Mod. Street Mod,
yeah. He was there with me when I was on the phone with Dad, and he was like, yep, that sounds like, you know, typical my like immigrant parents, because he's like, my parents are the same way. But yeah, not sure how you guys relate to that, or if you guys relate to that or not.
Well, I've never been on podium, so cannot relate.
We'll change that.
Mm. Yeah, I was gonna say you're up there, dude. You're fast. I don't know what you're talking about. You'll get up there eventually.
Hopefully, one of these days. I don't know, Audubon, like that was a complete wash. I've said it before, and that my car was having so many overheat problems. My PB at Audubon was under lit mode and without full power for the last 3 or 4 corners, and then HMP. I think I got 6th or 7th, and then Laguna was a festival format, so I think I got 7th or 8th, but I was working on 5th and trying to get into the podium sprint for 2 of the qualifying sessions, I think. We'll see.
You're consistently top 10 in a car that's actually street driven.
Yeah, I was going to say, your car is similar to mine, where it's just bolt-ons, dude. It's not like it's a built engine or a turbo or, you know, crazy suspension geometry and stuff like that. It's just stuff that you can buy on the web, put it on your street car and go to the track.
Exactly.
Hurt some feelings.
At the end of the day, like, I love the car. I love the characteristics. And even without grid life, I'd be on track with it. And it just brings so much joy. So like, even if I was last place, I'm still having a good time and still, yeah, just enjoying the car. And the fact that I am placing where I am is just icing on the cake to me, to be completely honest. So it is for me, a good time. And hopefully with these
personalities are also different, right? Like Nick, you want to do all these events and different you want to try a new track every time, right? That's your goal, and just have fun.
Yep.
For me, it's like a competitive aspect of thing. Like I want to be as competitive as possible with the top tier people. Not sure, Eddie, like what's your take on all these events?
Well, I just go to have fun. I'm sort of, I know my car is not competitive in this class. It never really has been. Mm-hmm. So what I do to make up for it is just sheer will and practice. Try really hard to gain the positions by just being better at driving and not focusing so much on the build of the car. I mean, granted, my car does have a lot done to it, all things considered, but it's not a built engine. It's not E85. I mean, it's 93.
E85. What's wrong with this?
Nothing, but it adds a lot of horsepower on an FKA.
Yeah. Dang, how much power does that add?
You're probably talking 30-ish horsepower, 40 horsepower.
Is that what Aaron has?
That's what Aaron has. Aaron's car walks me.
Holy shit.
It's like I'm standing still.
How much power, like total power, does it make on E85?
It's in the 400s, right?
Probably makes 400, yeah, 415 maybe.
Reliably?
Yeah.
No? I mean,
really?
I mean, the transmission, you're always playing, you're always rolling the dice when you're making that much torque through the front wheel. I look at everything on a scale of, is it worth it? And for me and the whole E85 thing, it just, I can't pass inspection, which means I can't drive the car on the street as easily. And
I'm sorry.
And, there's no E85 stations around me. So if I wanted to go do E85, I'd have to buy a huge barrel of the stuff. So
yeah,
it's just not worth it.
Just do all the Midwest events where there's plenty of E85 around.
Yeah,
at least that's what I'm hoping for.
I think I'm going to try it, see how it goes with the current configuration of the car.
Do you need to upgrade anything? Like fuel system upgrades?
Yes, in order to support E85? Yeah, so you have to do the high-pressure fuel pump on the motor. I wouldn't run fully 85. I would do like an E60 mix. And because the car can't handle full E85 without doing like injectors and all that stuff, which I'm not gonna do. So, it just to me seems like a lot of effort for a lot of headache, and I'm just.
How long do you plan on owning this car for?
I don't know. I keep saying another year, and then it's another year. Okay. Like, but I really like this car. Probably another 3 years.
The reason I ask it that way is because I was in the same boat where I kept putting off getting injectors and high-pressure fuel pump for E85 until I just kind of sat down and like really thought about it. And I've always contemplated about selling the RS and getting something else. But then I really just kind of like learned to love it after Laguna. And after that, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to pull the trigger and buy the injectors, buy the high-pressure fuel pump, and go full E5 because I really just cannot see a future without the car for the present time. Come a year from now, that might be a completely different story, but I am looking forward to, like, topping what the engine or what the setup can do and finally no longer having to mix at the fuel pump or pull out the calculator to see how much 85 to put in when combination with 93. Oh shoot, this is 91. I need to put in a little bit more E85. I could just fill up and go.
Yeah. No, I see what you mean. Yeah, I think it would be a lot different story if I didn't have to worry about the Massachusetts laws and there was E85 around here.
Yeah, but that is a very big part. Like,
yeah, it's like, what the hell am I doing? I'm buying a system that I can't use.
Oh, that's totally fair. I completely understand that.
Eddie, what events are you doing next year?
Ah, it's a good thing you asked. So I went through the list with my friend David and Corey because we have to get all our schedule aligned. So we're doing CMP.
Nice.
As the first event. And then we're going to do... This is the one that's up in the air is Rev Up. We were thinking about doing Rev Up, but it's not fully confirmed. We're going to do Midwest Fest, Mid-Ohio.
See you there.
Lime Rock.
Nope.
And then Pit.
So you're doing CMP, Lime Rock, Mid-Ohio, and Midwest Fest.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh.
And then and Pittsburgh, yeah.
When is Pitt again?
October. It's way late in the season. Partially the reason why we're going to do it because it's like, you know, it's late in the season. And
yeah, October 11th will be Pitt race.
We thought about doing Laguna again, but we're just like, it's not worth it. We did it. It's really fun. Great track. Not worth the travel.
Yeah, it's because it's literally across the country from you.
Yeah, it's the other side.
Would you be interested in still flying out there to spectate or to crew for someone?
Yeah, I'd consider it. Yeah, I'd go hang out.
Sure. That's something that I'm worth considering. If
that might be worth it. Yeah,
I think the vibe. Like, I want to go back to Laguna and just purely be a spectator, just to like really absorb what was going on off track without worrying about like any kind of car setup changes. I heard some really good things about that. Like, I didn't see the car show whatsoever. So I would really want to go check that out. And there's so many different areas around Monterey Bay as well to go and explore after the track stuff is shut down. So I'm in our, my wife and I are probably going to go out to Laguna this year, at least to spectate.
Monterey is beautiful. We were there. We spent the day there before the event. I've been there previously. Yeah, we went to the aquarium.
Nice.
Really fun. I'd been there previously, so I kind of knew the area. But I'd never been to Laguna. So that was a first. Getting to drive, it was just awesome. The vibes were good, but like you said, I didn't get nearly enough time to, you know, actually partake in most things. And a lot of people went to bed really early, which is fine. Nothing against that. But I feel like I was in bed at like 10:30 every night. And I'm like, oh, okay, good night.
Yeah, like the T-Pain concert on Saturday, it started, I think, at what, 7:30, maybe 8 o'clock at the latest. And it was over by 9:45, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it was phenomenal. It was awesome seeing Hurt up there singing as well and announcing his partnership with T-Pain on their new Nappy Boy Automotive Group. But yeah, like it was not Midwest. The late night shenanigans did not happen at Laguna. Or if they did, I was way too tired and slept through it all.
You were definitely sleeping.
I sleep like a rock.
Well, you guys
and I got high, I think.
Laguna? I don't think so.
Not you, Fez. No, I'm pretty sure I did that night.
Oh.
You probably did. I came and hung out.
You were there.
I was there.
Yeah. You were there.
And that's when everyone else was sleeping. And then
yeah, because we had to try the California marijuana to see if it was really that great. Everybody talks about it. It was that great. I was very, very high. It was fantastic.
So, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yo, what do y'all say we get into some questions?
Yeah,
One last thing. As you guys were talking about it, CMP is only 15 hours from me. Only. I might consider doing it.
The track looks really fun.
Yeah, because I could stop in Atlanta at my buddy's place and leave the car there or something, and then he's also going to go to Gingerman right after. So I can, like, we can tow up to Gingerman afterwards. Because it's in...
Because CMP is in April 5th, and then Gingerman is May 18th.
Yeah, so about a month after.
What events are you doing?
I am definitely doing Rev Up, Midwest Festival, Road America, and Mid-Ohio.
Likewise.
Okay. So you're staying Midwest. That makes total sense.
I'm just going to leave the car there for two or 3 months. And then
Makes sense. Absolutely.
I really want to do Lime Rock, but we'll see. Mm-hmm.
I think I was going to say, if there's one event, and I said this to you last year, and then you felt really guilty not going, you got to do one Lime Rock event. It is such a fun environment. It's just a fun event. It's really, really, really chill. I think partially it's because there's no music. There's no actual festival part. So the people who are there are just people who are camping or they're driving. So you don't have, you know, the spectators who were there for like the concert. So it's mostly car related stuff. It's fun. And it's beautiful there. It's not like a dirt mound that you're standing on with ants and shit. So
that's what I've seen in the pictures with like the, you could see the Milky Way in some of the photos. I was like, that's
beautiful.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's wild. Wow. And then the track itself is also unlike anything you've ever driven. So
yeah, I'm definitely going to sign up for it. I just don't know if I'm going to go through with it because of the scheduling and how far it is. Worst case, I'm definitely flying out there to hang out.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, worst case, you should just come hang out.
Yeah.
So Nick, are you doing any different events or are you doing the same as Fez?
I'm literally doing the exact same. I'm actually going to be driving the Focus out. I'm not going to tow it in an effort to try to save a little bit of money.
God bless. God bless America right there.
Worst case, like between Fez and some other friends, like if something happens to the Focus and I can't get it home, I should be able to borrow one of their trailers and then drive their race car on the street back to Fez's sister's place or wherever we're parking the cars.
Okay.
So it should be all right. Because I think the longest drive is Mid-Ohio. So like Mid-Ohio, as long as I get to Road America, I should be okay. Because the plan right now that my family and I are setting up is to go out to my father's cabin up in northern Minnesota, check it out, make sure everything's good to go, do some mowing, and then it's an 8-hour drive from Minnesota over to Road America. So,
oh my god!
When I say this, like, we'll have the expedition. So if something happens to the Focus at Road America, I can just pick up. I'm going to pick up a U-Haul trailer anyways to tow the Focus down. So it should be okay. And then that way, at least one of us in street class can say we street driven our car.
Yeah. What are your feelings on the rules?
Ooh, hot take. Yeah, they're fine. Well, I think that going for a restrictor and getting rid of the other turbo restriction rules is not really necessary. I think the rules are fine as is. At least, like, I see it as, like, the people that are up at the top of the class, the Evos and Subarus, sure, they're the ones that are dominating, but like, they're also the ones that I aspire to. So I would like to, like, I'd like to leave them where they're at and try to get up to the level. So I am not a big fan of any rule that would make them illegal or make them slower, even though that would theoretically make us better in, like, comparison. Now for like the 41 pounds per minute ruling where they want to apply that to limit turbos, I think having the restrictor to allow any turbo is fine. The restrictor is actually quite restrictive. So like if you truly have an aftermarket turbo that flows more than 41 pounds an hour with the size restrictor they are requiring right now and the provisional rules, it's going to limit them and they're not going to walk away from the class. So I'm not worried about those setups. How about you? What do you think?
I think the reality is that the way the rules are, an Evo is going to win the championship again.
Yeah.
I really do like your aspiring your potential aspiring goals to try to beat those Evos, but I got to tell you, those things are so fast.
Yeah, they are.
Like, it is not even the same car, like, the same class. Like, I go out there and I run, like, a 37 at Mid-Ohio, let's just say. That same car in street class, same class, that Evo does a 27.
27?
Jeez. I'm pretty sure. Or, excuse me, maybe like a 30.
I thought Street Mod was doing 32, 33s.
I think that's Eddie's point is that they're doing, I think that's Eddie's point is that they're doing like those kinds of times. Like they're up there, at least at the spear of the street class right now, they're putting down lap times that are comparable to the top of Street Mod class in some instances.
I'm going to Google this.
Because at least over at Laguna, so like Eddie and I, we both broke into the sub 40 barrier. We got into the 39s, and yet the top three in street class, I think they were all in the 34s.
Okay, Street Mod, Dewey did a 28, and then Michael Amick did a 29. So 29 to low 30s is what Street Mod was running. Street All Wheel Drive is running 32. Was the fastest? That was a WRX STI. And then 33.9 was the Evo with Luca.
Okay. So there are two.
That's like a 4 to 5 second gap. That's massive.
Yeah. So like there, I mean, if I did a big turbo, let's pretend the rules were in my favor and was like Type R's can do big turbos. I don't think I would make up 4 seconds with just a turbo. It's just the way all wheel drive cars are able to put power out of corners. And I think that's the main. Yeah. What we're saying.
How much tire do you have? Are you all the way up to the class limit of 285?
Yeah. I'm a 285 in the front and a 255 in the rear.
Sheesh.
Interesting. Do you know how much your car weighs?
3,100 pounds with me in it.
God, that's such a good pound to tire ratio. Like, it's such little weight compared to how much tire you have on the tarmac. Because, like, the all drive cars are limited to 255, plus we are all heavier.
Yeah, it's just that car is just a great car. Like, that car is timeless. The Evolution 8, 9, 7, 8, mm-hmm. 9, they're just so fast because they weigh nothing. They make great power if you do light modifications, even with just a stock turbo. You know, Lucas is a stock engine and a stock turbo. So,
And I think that was the biggest problem with how the rules were currently written is that EVOs were going to be the same. Like, the rules did not change when EVO was running, but it would actually hurt the Subaru guys that are up at the top.
I think they're tired of the Subarus and EVO, the Subarus in particular, because I think Josh won it like 4 years in a row. you know, the aftermarket turbos, built engines thing. That to me is the big crux of the issue. And the reason they keep the built engines, I'm assuming, is because of the Subarus, because they blow up. but
yeah,
I feel like that is also what's allowing them to run much more horsepower. So yeah I figured, like, I think the thing that I thought of was, like, why don't you just have a restrictor on the all-wheel drive turbo cars. You know?
That screws Nick over even more.
Yeah, it would screw me over big time. And the Corolla GR.
Yeah, I mean, the Corolla's in CTR.
The Corolla, I feel like, is not in ready for street yet. There's not enough aftermarket support for it. It'll get there, but that car was so much slower than I expected at every
track. Yeah, especially out of the box. Agreed. Yeah. Out of the box, I was kind of surprised by the limitation, or at least like those lower lap times they were putting out. But with time, the aftermarket will help support that, and it'll
for sure up there in street class. It'll come back. Yeah.
So it can't really make more than like 350 without getting a bigger turbo, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
But that's where most of these cars are. I mean, most of these turbos are all very similar in size, snails, you know, tiny little turbos. And most of these cars make probably just about 400 horsepower with a stock turbo.
Mm. Yeah, I'm hoping to get my car out on the dyno this year. So after I go 85 with the front mount, I'll just be very curious to see what kind of power it ends up putting down. So that way, like, I can finally definitively say what the car does power-wise, how much weight or what it weighs. And that'll help me better understand where the car kind of sits and where my car and driver combo sits among the class.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you're like in the upper end of the mid pack is where I would point you, your car.
I'm trying to be, ideally, I'm trying to be that McLaren that kind of like comes out of the lower end and starts fighting. No, I'm kidding. Who knows where I end up landing this year?
Hey, you guys want to get into questions, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, finally.
Sorry about that.
Oh, sorry. No. Like, I interrupted, but I was like, we're an hour and 12 minutes in.
No, you're totally fine. Y'all have the screenshot that I took of all the photo questions that people were asking?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
Hold on. I can pull it up.
I'm just going to send it.
Yeah, yeah. I see it.
Okay. I'm going to pick out the Kanakri, Jason's question, actually. Why do you travel from Texas to race in Midwest? I'm excited that you do, though. So the reason for me...
I think this is also applied to Eddie, too, because he also travels pretty far out
to
these events.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially from Massachusetts all the way out to California.
Yeah.
But, like, for me in particular, and we kind of touched this earlier, but, like, it's not necessarily I'm racing in the Midwest, but I'm racing with grid life. Like, I've tried to go to the closer grid life events, and it honestly is like so much better than all these other so at least what we have to offer in Texas. There's so much that these other orgs in Texas can learn from grid life events when it comes to how the event is set up, the communication, the friendliness among all the staff and the competitors and the inclusion of spectators and crew as well. I think and it's just an overall package where whenever I'm at a Great Life event, I'm never bored. So that alone makes it worth it to go to the different events. And then the icing on the cake is the fact that Great Life is picking out tracks, or they have tracks on the schedule that I have come to love and enjoy in all these racing video games in our upgrade. So circling all the way back to the beginning of when we were talking about how we got into cars in the first place, like Road America has been in several Forza games. Laguna has been in several Forza games. Lime Rock has been in at least one of the Forza games, and we were playing that around. So it is just like reliving all these childhood memories and like aspiration and goals of like, oh man, like I hope one day I'm not playing this on a controller. I hope I'm like physically feeling the G-forces going through these corners. So that's my take on like, it is, it's a bucket list. At the end of the day, it's a bucket list. Like I really want to experience all these tracks. I have an entire Google Maps, not drive, but like a list of bucket list tracks that like, I need to hit these tracks at least for one lap before I die. Started to be morbid, but like, that's my goal.
How many tracks have you done?
I have I think I'm at 20. Like, Autobahn was number 20 for me this year. Yep, 20.
Wow, that's a big list, dude.
I take that back. I'm sorry. Laguna was number 20, 20th event tracks that I've done, like, separate tracks, 15.
Yeah, 15. Okay, that's still great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can go through real quick. Ukraine Road. I'll post it in the Instagram photo. But yeah, 15 tracks, and I hope to keep that list growing.
What about you, Eddie? What makes you come all the way out to the Midwest?
Basically, the exact same thing that Nick said. Around here, the events that we have are a totally different crowd, mainly older, wealthy drivers who just do this for fun. And there are some local time trial groups, but again, it's stuck in the Stone Ages. And I think for me, these aren't just track days anymore. These are getting together with family pretty much. And you can't put a price on that. At the end of the day, I cannot put a price on how much fun I have when I see everybody and getting together, and then the car stuff is just a bonus. So like, yeah, that's why I drive stupid amounts of gasoline and tires and wear and tear. And yeah, I mean, I guess you could say it's a ridiculous hobby, but it's one that I don't think I could get any more. Like, there's not many more things I would be able to do that would give me as much pleasure and enjoyment. Maybe sex, but other than that, there's not much else. So,
I can agree there. Okay, like speaking of, hold on, real quick. Speaking of like the money aspect, yes, our hobby is quite expensive, but there are almost every hobby, if you really dig into like the weeds of like trying to perfect it, like playing pool, for example. My friends and I went over on Saturday, went to a bar that had pools, pool tables, a pool hall, and there was an actual tournament over there with jerseys, and people had bags with their special pool sticks, I think is what they call it officially. I don't know, but like, I'm looking at the prices right now, and you can buy a single pool stick for over $1,000. So, yeah, every hobby has its price.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if I wasn't in racing, I would be in some other ridiculous hobby. You know, it's all the same.
Yeah, exactly. How about you, Fez? Why do you do Midwest tracks?
Similar answer to Eddie. I used to live in Kentucky, so that's kind of how I got introduced to Grid Life. Events were closer back then, and I got attached to the people that I used to drive compete with, and the competition was freaking awesome, dude. Like, I'm a very competitive person, so being able to be on that competitive stage, being live streamed, and just competing with some really fast drivers kind of got me hooked. And then, yeah, like in Dallas, for example, it's a similar vibes to Boston area, man. Like, people here are generally just wealthy people with Porsches, Corvettes, Camaros, mm-hmm. and whatnot, right? Like, and they're just slow. Like, there's no other way around it. So there's not really any competition. Like, I went to one NASA event here last year, and my car is the same spec as now, but I was gridded next to a C7Z or C7 Grand Sport on Hoosiers, a McLaren 720S, and a GT4s, GT3s, and I'm just like, where am I? Like, why am I gridded next to all these like 100,000 plus cars, right? And I just like, yeah, and it kind of turned me off, and I was like, all right, like I need to be around faster people, because I think one of the reasons, another thing is, when you're around people that are at grid life, and then you're sharing data with all these fast people, your driver skill gets better exponentially, because you can share data with fast people and become faster. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that goes along with like the competition side of like the friendliness of grid life competitors, is that a lot of people are very willing to share data among each other to help each other go faster. And that personally helped me, and I've shared information that has helped me with others, and I saw them go faster. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
and yeah, we all elevate each other.
We push each other to be better as drivers, as people that modify cars, as people that as just people, right? As persons,
yeah,
individual persons, we push each other to be better. And like going back to Eddie's point, like, yeah, like now it's literally like going to see family, and it's like a family reunion every time I go to an event. And I love every single person that I compete with or share the track with.
Who is the crazy uncle of grid life?
Crazy uncle?
Yeah. Who would you say is the crazy uncle of grid life? If you had to pick like one person at Midwest Fest that is like out there, that arguably would be a crazy uncle. You got anyone in mind? Right now, for me, it's you, Fez. You're my crazy uncle.
I'm the uncle.
you haven't met Dalton then.
Dalton Klein?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Iowa boys know how to party, dude.
The Iowa boys heat a hot tub with beer cans. Warm beer cans.
Yep.
Oh, man. I remember like going out to Grid Life, and the first time that my wife saw that hot tub filling up and heating up, it blew her freaking mind out. And like, wait, they brought a hot tub here to a track? When are they going to enjoy it? I'm like, at sunset, I guess. And yeah, the shenanigans that went on around that hot tub was hysterical.
That last year they had a margarita machine too.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous. I should have gone last year.
Everything. Yeah, it was wild.
All right.
Yeah, I love the... Go on.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say is the year that I went, we were paddock next to the karaoke boys. I forget their names there. I'm drawing a blank.
The RX-7 guys.
Brother. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys were you guys were parked right in front of us.
Team Brap.
That was a good time. What were you going to bring, say, Fez?
Oh, we were parked next to Team Brap.
Yeah. Yeah, good times. All right. You want to pick another question?
Eddie, which one do you want to choose?
Ooh, let me see. Sorry, you caught me off guard there. let's do the one. Nick, are you a ride or die front wheel drive guy, or do you like all types? What would be your next car if you were looking? Well, first thing, aren't you all wheel drive?
Yeah, backstory on this. So Matt, I'm sure you've met him. He's the guy that has the maroon 240 in I think street mod.
Matt's he lives over here. HMP.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Well, in any case, he lived over here in the Austin area, and yeah, that was a blunder on his part. I already messaged him separately. I was like, "Hey, you know the Focus RS is all-wheel drive," and he said, "Whoops, I thought." Yeah, just a quick little blunder. In any case, so I'll replace the front-wheel drive portion with all-wheel drive. So, Nick, are you a ride or die all-wheel drive guy, or do you like all types? What would be your next car if you were looking elsewhere? So, as far as being an all-wheel drive guy, yes, 100%. I had my 04 Subaru, and when I sold that and got into a base model 2012 Focus hatchback. So literally the RS, but slower and front wheel drive and automatic. Those 2 years were very miserable. It was a low point in my life. And I could not wait to get back into all-wheel drive. And like, oh man, I remember seeing the day that the YouTube video dropped of Ken Block going around the Ford, I guess, proving grounds with a camo wrap Focus RS.
Oh, dude, actually that showed off. Yes, that was awesome.
Oh man, I was like, one day I will get this car. And I think that dropped in early 2015. So like when I finally got my own in 2018, it was such a dream come true. In any case, I love the dual personality of an all-wheel drive, where sure, it can push like a front-wheel drive, but like if you just pin your foot into the throttle, the back end starts to come around. And now you're swinging it sideways and just having a good old time. And then it comes along. I would also add to that is that I'm not only an all-wheel drive guy, but I'm also a hatchback or wagon guy, just for the practicality that comes with it, with being able to just throw all my tools, the track tires inside. It just swallows everything, luggage, tent, you name it, and I can take it out to the track. So,
absolutely.
Definitely all-wheel drive.
Yeah, I mean, the hatchback thing, I'm like hooked now that I've had the Type R. I mean, my daily's a hatchback now, so.
Wait, what's your other daily?
I drive a 2023 Acura Integra A-spec.
Ah, dude, that's so sick. If my wife did not get the Model 3, I would have convinced her to get that A-spec Integra 100%. Is yours the manual or automatic?
It is a Manuel.
Nice. We probably would have had to get the automatic, but nonetheless,
still a fun car.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you a ride or die? How about you, Eddie? Are you a ride or die front wheel drive guy?
Am I a ride or die front wheel drive guy? No, not at all. I'll drive anything. I get pleasure out of driving, not driving specific cars. I mean, I love all vehicles. And obviously there's reasons why I choose certain vehicles over others. But like if you got me into a Miata, I would have just as much fun as an FK8 or a McLaren or a Mustang. I mean, they're all fun in their own way. And I think if you are only choosing the same car or the same type of car, it's really narrow-sighted, and I think you're missing a lot out of driving. So
yeah. No, that is totally fair. Because like a follow-up the second part of Matt's question, which is what would be your next car if you were looking? At the present time, man, I don't really know. Like if the Focus, something happened to the RS. I really like street class as well. So like I have the mindset of like, what would be the next car that's not a Focus that would fit into street class? I would still get an equal amount of enjoyment. And that's a really, really hard sell. Of anything that's not the RS for me right now. I will say if the Supra four-cylinder had a manual, that would be enticing to me, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really put much thought into it, what would come after.
Why the four-cylinder?
Because the six-cylinder fits into street GT.
So you want to stick to street.
Yeah.
I think if I was... I think... If I'm looking at it as just for me, then yeah, I'd probably stick with a Honda because I have all the parts and I understand it. But if I'm just starting over, let's pretend I just am looking at a new car. I want a rear-wheel drive car. I really want a Corvette.
Ooh.
I love.
He already has a ZL1, by the way.
Yeah, I love. Yeah. I have a Camaro.
Oh, so you're not even getting like, it's not like the first time you get a Corvette. It's just like taking what you already own and applying it to Time Attack, right? In that kind of a sense?
To a sense. I mean, I want something that's like, I want like an ex Grand Am Corvette race car.
Ooh,
what's that? Wait, old Grand Am. I'm a new. Oh.
Like an old IMSA Corvette or something.
Like a C6R or something.
Yes, yeah, something like that, and then rip the really fancy engine and just put like an LS3 in it and just make it really reliable. That to me would be fun to drive. I think my next vehicle, I drove the Club Sport Cayman recently on the track, and I now can totally understand the appeal of the mid-engined race car. It is so much like Porsche is just so much fun. It's such a good car. But I can't afford that. So Corvette will do.
Corvette is pretty much the V8 solution to get a Corvette. Miata's always the answer when it comes to four cylinders, in my opinion. And if you're just trying to get entry level, but if you're trying to take the next step, Corvette is a very solid way to go, and it will take you incredibly far in multiple motorsport series.
Realistically, though, more than likely, if I was going to do this all over again, I'd probably get something cheap, like an old touring car or something, not a Corvette. Probably be like an old like Honda or a Mazda 3 Series or something that they raced, like, you know, 8 years ago, and do wheel-to-wheel racing with it.
Interesting. I will say, yeah. I think if the Focus RS did not exist, I probably would be in a 2014 STI hatch. Which, looking at these price, I know they break, I know, but they also, I love that rumble. How much, 70,000 miles, 21K? That's not too bad.
For a 10-year-old car? 10-year-old Subaru? Okay.
How old was your, wasn't your 2008 BMW over 30K?
It was 2011, first of all. And it was a BMW at the end of the day. It was like a way more expensive car.
That's true. Especially with how much it sat outside.
It didn't sit outside.
Parked? Oh, that's right. It was in the garage.
It was parked in the garage. It just didn't move. Yeah, if I were to redo it, I think that's one of the questions on here too. Like, I've had the 86 for a decade, and I think that's one of the reasons why I want to try a different chassis as well.
It's been a decade, holy shit, it has.
For like my Marisa Motorsports business thing, I think I would either get the Supra or like the GR Corolla and develop that, or I would get the M2.
Hey, Fez, if I got a GR Corolla, would you sponsor me?
I got you.
Well, that changes everything.
Exactly. It's like, all right, for sale. Focus RS, never abused. Never beat off. Nope.
80,000 miles, original clutch, because I baby it, like highway miles only. Sure, it's got a few screws in the hatch from, I don't know, a wing, but that was just for show. Like, nothing crazy on the track. So. Yeah. That's funny. Well, hey, were there any other questions that are top of the list, or I kind of want to save some of these for later. Ooh, I have a last question wrapping this up. What are y'all doing this weekend for Christmas?
I'll let Eddie answer first.
Well, I'm Jewish, so.
Oh, that's right. Your upbringing. Did that have anything to do with racing?
God, no. Because if it did, they'd be like, no, you're wasting your money.
Fair. So what are you doing for the weekend outside of not doing
Christmas? So I celebrate Christmas with Corey, my girlfriend.
Nice.
And she just finished college. Congratulations, Corey.
Congrats, Corey.
Congrats, Corey.
Yep. And so we'll celebrate that and, yeah, just hang out and enjoy the being with family. That's about it.
Nice. Awesome. Fez, what are you doing this weekend?
Same thing that you're doing. One of our friends, he's having his baby shower, and he's flying to Dallas for that. So we're going to go to that.
Finally. And again, we bring up Ravi for the fifth time in a row in our podcast at minute 93. All right. Roughly 93. In any case, Eddie, you got to meet him. He's a really cool dude.
I'd love to meet him. Sounds like a nice guy.
Yeah. LS3 swap BRZ. Would have competed in Street Mod this year, but some work needed to be done, so could not make it. But I really hope he has it all sorted out for next year. But yeah, he's having a him and his wife are having a baby come this spring, so they're awesome. Flying in to Dallas, and they're putting together a party to go and celebrate it. So we'll be there this weekend. So yeah, like Fez said, I'll be there with him in Dallas and just hanging out with the bros from high school and college.
We get to see what a Cybertruck looks like for the first time.
Ooh, yeah, I cannot wait to talk about that and ride in it.
Be careful when you're walking by it. It will cut you open.
That's what I've heard.
So
I just want to sit on the tonneau cover while it moves. That's what I want to see.
You can do that. All right.
Well, it can support 300 pounds. I don't know if it can support 300 pounds while moving, but we're going to find out. I don't weigh 300 pounds, but you never know. We'll see. What
Eddie, are you going to say? Want to give a shout out to anything before you leave?
No, I'm good. I'm just thank you for having me on here. This was such a good time. Hopefully I'll get to do it again with you gentlemen soon.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such a good time having you on here. And Eddie, I honestly like enjoy all of your podcasts that you do with Devin on your Backseat Drivers podcast, as well as being a guest on Ted's. Oh, I'm blanking on the name. Respect the Drive podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I jump around a lot. So believe it or not, my college, I studied radio communications. So getting to do this makes me feel good that I'm using my college degree to for something instead of what I do now, which is not use it at all. So, and I will have to have you both on our podcast at some point. I'll have to return the favor. So
for sure.
I would absolutely love that. Well, awesome. We'll leave it at that. Or any last words from you, Fez?
Nope. Have a good one, everyone. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. All of it.
Yep. Be safe, everyone. If you drink, please don't drive. Have a DD. Take an Uber. Do anything. But like, have fun with family. Have fun with your friends. But please do it all responsibly. And have a happy new year, everyone. So, Eddie, Fez, I will talk to y'all later.
All right, guys.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.